Hi, I'm Matt Waller, Dean of the Sam M. Walton College of Business. Welcome to Be Epic, the podcast where we explore excellence, professionalism, innovation, and collegiality, and what those values mean in business, education, and your life today. With me here today, Professor Sarah Goforth. She's an adjunct professor in the Sam M. Walton College of Business, and she is really helping us to advance a key part of our mission, because the mission of the Walton College is to advance and disseminate business knowledge using a diverse, inclusive, and global perspective, and encouraging innovation in our primary strategic endeavors, which include retail, analytics, and entrepreneurship. So of our three strategic endeavors, entrepreneurship is a key part of it. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah, I've talked to you about entrepreneurship quite a bit, and I've seen you teach, I've heard about your teaching, and I've been very impressed with it. And I know you're also an expert in communications. You have a scientific background, lots of interest in technology commercialization, and so we're going to be talking about all of that today. But if you wouldn't mind, I would like to start with a little bit of a discussion on the entrepreneurial mindset.
Sure.
What is the entrepreneurial mindset?
It's something that I think about every day, really, in some fashion or another. I think, you know, the term entrepreneur can, in some circles, have a little bit of a cloud of mystique around it. You know, the idea being to be an entrepreneur, you have to go to Silicon Valley and raise millions of dollars in venture capital and ultimately earn $500 million and then write a book. And that is one model. But there are many, many other models for what it is to be an entrepreneur and for what it is to be entrepreneurial. And something that I believe and try to help students see every day is that an entrepreneurial mindset is really the ability to look into the world, to look into your own life, and when you see problems, to become energized by them rather than to be discouraged by them, and to cultivate within yourself the ability to surround yourself with the people, the knowledge, the tools to go out and tackle the problems, whatever they are. And you may do this within your own life as an individual. You may do it within your job as an innovator in a company or a nonprofit. And you may do it as this traditional type of entrepreneur, meaning going out and starting a business venture. But I believe that the mindset is really relevant no matter who you are and what your role in life is.
A lot of times when people think about entrepreneurs, they think about pure startups. But one thing I've been seeing from our partners, because many of our company partners are enormous. I mean, just in Northwest Arkansas, we have the headquarters of three Fortune 500 companies, but we have major offices of about 1,500 consumer products companies. And it seems like they're all becoming more and more interested in this entrepreneurial mindset. What do you think is driving that?
Well, I think, you know, as you know better than most people, the world is just in a constant state of disruption. The pace of technological change is faster than it perhaps has ever been, and that creates a lot of discomfort about the future for all companies, small companies, mid-sized companies, and big companies. I was just this past weekend at the kickoff event of the Delta I Fund, which is our regional accelerator program for very early stage ideas and companies. And this cohort is focused on agriculture. And I know very little about agriculture, so I was there as an instructor to train on the methodology, but it was really exciting to me to see all of these people in the room from big industrial mega ag companies to individual family farmers, all looking at the disruption and seeing opportunity for economic development in the Delta, seeing opportunity for sustainability, seeing all these new tools at their disposal and trying to figure out how do I use these and make the world a better place, create opportunity for myself and my family. And I think most companies see that too, and they want that quality in their employees more and more. I've definitely experienced that in my career.
So, Sarah, would you mind You mentioned the iFund.
Yeah.
Would you mind talking a little bit about that and also about what you did at this event?
Sure. It's a fantastic program that I've been involved with for 2 years, and it's been going on for 3 years, funded by the state of Arkansas and also by the Delta Regional Authority. It's a training and mentoring program designed to help early stage entrepreneurs, some of whom have had no formal training whatsoever. They just have an idea, a dream. Sometimes it's for people who have a product and they want to build a business around it. It's a program that pairs these teams with a mentor who meets with them every week, and usually this is an entrepreneur who has some experience in their industry, along with instructional opportunities. And we use a toolkit called the Lean Startup Toolkit, and it's not rocket science. The core idea of that toolkit is you start to build a business by forming a lot of guesses, a lot of hypotheses around what your model might be, and you very quickly get out into the world and start testing those ideas and gathering information with real people who are facing those problems that you're trying to solve, so that if it's a bad idea, you learn that quickly. Usually it's so that some of your ideas, maybe it's about your distribution channels or about how you'll make money or who will pay you, so that you can evolve, morph your original idea into something that will have more success. So this program is designed to help people learn that really fast by guiding them through this process of talking to the people who would be their customers and learning from them. And the kickoff weekend, all the mentors and the teams and the instructors, so I'm an instructor in the program, get together and we talk about the Lean Startup method, and we actually do some customer discovery right there in that very first day. So these people think that they're gonna go and sit in a classroom all day long, and it's like, nope, for the next 3 hours, you're out into the world. You've gotta get 3 interviews under your belt and we'll get back together the next day to talk about it. Yeah, it's the best way to learn.
How have you done this before, or was this your first time?
With the iFund?
Yes.
This was my 5th cohort that I've been involved in.
Wow.
Yeah.
What have you learned yourself by going through 5 cohorts here?
Well, my favorite thing about being part of it is that I always learn about the industries and the businesses of the people who are in the cohort. So it's, you know, a never-ending learning curve for me. But what I've learned in terms of what kinds of educational methodologies work is that the teams who really believe the most in their product and have the firmest idea of what they want to do struggle the most because they have this problem of confirmation bias. They want to hear their audience say, yes, that's a great idea. I'm definitely going to want to buy it. And people on the other end often want to say that too. So when you go into an interview with a customer, we train people, we teach people, go in by asking open-ended questions, not selling your idea, pitching your idea. You know, here's my product. Do you like it? Don't ask that question because people will say yes. So people who have a really strong vision and have already developed a product, that is typically challenging for them. They're already in pitch mode, and untraining that is hard. The people who come into the program who have experienced a problem, so for example, a farmer who, I'm on the ag beat because it's fresh in my mind after this weekend, a farmer who has crops that are resistant to the main pesticide available, experiences this problem, wants to solve it, has this great personal need, but doesn't yet have the toolkit, they're very open-minded about the process. They're very comfortable going out and talking to people like them. So for me, take-home lesson there as a person who's at the University of Arkansas is the earlier we can expose students to this way of thinking, to this way of being in the world where when you see a problem, it's okay to test your ideas. It's okay to create something, a minimal viable product that's maybe kind of sloppy, and get it out there rather than developing your idea behind your desk for 15 years and only starting to pursue it when you have a PhD. It's a lot easier to learn. It's like learning a language. The earlier you try to learn it in your life, the easier it is to pick up.
I've noticed this with dissertations as well. I noticed back when I was doing lots of dissertations that students who came into a program saying, this is what I want to do my dissertation on, this is the methodology I want to use, et cetera, I'm a little reluctant to want to work with them because it's going to be so hard. It's better to come in, maybe they have questions about a phenomenon, but it's better if they come and say, what theory explains this?
Right.
Is this even a good question?
Right.
How would you investigate this question? They're the ones who do the best. And I, you know, Sarah, one of the things because I really believe in feedback. You know, feedback is like gold.
Yes.
And the more you get in life, the better you become. It's painful, but actually the more, once you get a lot of feedback, you start realizing it's really not that painful, one,
right.
You know? And two, when you start seeing the benefits of it, you want more because you realize this is going to make me better. It's a competitive advantage to
yes.
get feedback. I'm trying to implement that in the college across the board. I know when I became dean, one of the things I asked leadership team is I said, how satisfied are students with the education they're getting? And I don't mean student evaluations. How satisfied are parents when they come for orientation or for campus tours? How satisfied are recruiters with what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
Et cetera, right?
Right.
And the answer was, we don't know. So one of the things I started doing right away was trying to figure out how are we going to get this feedback?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we want to really improve, if we want to be a world-class business school, we have to get as much feedback as we can, and we need to incorporate it and change. We have to be willing to change. And that's hard. That's harder to do than it would seem.
Yeah, it's very entrepreneurial of you. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that I actually am really passionate about is the evolving business model of the university. Not our university specifically, although, yes, I think about our university, but in general, you know, universities for a long time were the purveyors of information.
Yes.
And we don't need to just be doing that anymore. You know, if we are simply a purveyor of information, we will find ourselves out of business very quickly. So we need to think about what other unique roles do we play? What other value do we provide? And I completely agree with you. Always be asking, are we doing it well? Are we meeting the market demand? And the market includes the students. It includes their parents. It includes the business community who have jobs for them. And then, of course, there's the research enterprise of the university. Basic research, you know, needs a business model. And it's not a business model in the sense of we should always be conducting research that has some commercial outcome, but we need to be helping and empowering those commercial outcomes so that society can understand why funding this basic research enterprise matters ultimately at the end of the day.
I noticed early on, one of our first conversations, it was clear to me you had some passion about this synergy between basic research and science.
Yes.
And commercialization and the virtuous cycle that it creates. Would you mind talking about that a little bit?
Yeah, you're right. And I actually have spent a great deal of my career very focused on the basic research enterprise. So I'm a science communicator by training and have worked at places that passionately defend the purpose of gathering knowledge for its own sake. So this is knowledge with no commercial outcome. And so I've had to question for myself even, what is that value? I'm not going to spend my career arguing for something that I don't really believe in. And so I've really studied over many years why it matters. Why does it matter if we understand the history of life on Earth? Why does it matter if we understand how cells communicate with each other? And I am now a hoarder of data about that topic. So I'll just throw out one stat, which is somebody did a study just a couple of years ago that found that if you study all of the papers in the scientific literature that have been cited just one time, just one citation. And you know, as an academic, the most good papers are cited many, many times. 80% of them can be traced in some way to a patent or a commercial outcome. So what this means to me is that 80% of all papers that have just one citation being traced to some commercial outcome, even when you're studying it as a basic researcher, the ways that the bacterial immune system work, for example. You can't predict what that outcome will be, but it's critically important to have that volume of knowledge for those commercial outcomes. So I believe that we within the university, and others too, so I worked at the Smithsonian, which has a role in studying the history of life on Earth, we have an obligation to connect the dots so that the body of knowledge is connected to pathways for commercialization when it makes sense. But we also have a very, very deep obligation to protect the army of foundation builders. So it's just like any kind of business out in the world without a foundation of understanding about the market and the economy and banking and accounting and all of that. You can't build a business. Without a fundamental understanding of how cells work, you can't create a drug. You certainly couldn't invent a technology like CRISPR. And there are many, many examples of technologies that began in a lab where someone was just pursuing their fundamental curiosity. So this is something that universities uniquely cultivate.
I've never heard anyone articulate that as well as you just did.
It's my favorite subject.
And, you know, for business, that's really important to understand.
Yes.
And for business people and politicians, it's easy to overlook the importance of that part of the ecosystem.
Yes.
Within business, we do basic research in business. You know, the most basic, I guess, would be what comes out of economics,
mm-hmm.
economic theory, empirical research in economics. But also, not just there, also psychology and economics, and I would say operations research. It seems to me you could probably trace most of the research in business to either operations research, meaning statistics and optimization, mm-hmm. mathematics types of things, or psychology or economics. Those are probably, and maybe sociology as well, and yeah. anthropology, I'm sorry, now that I'm thinking of it. But, you know, because I'm thinking, you know, Jeff Murray, who's yep. a marketing professor, he uses a lot of anthropological methods. He's been a very successful researcher. But he also uses a lot of philosophy of science mm-hmm. in his research of in marketing, which I think, you know, it's interesting. If most people read the books he reads, they might wonder, how could this apply? But if you're a student and you listen to him talk about brand building, for example, mm-hmm. you'll be amazed and you'll hear things you've never heard before. I know I used to think of brand building, for example, as being a bunch of people coming together and saying, okay, here's going to be our brand. Here's how we're going to market it, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember when I used to run our China executive MBA program. Mm-hmm. And so when he came over to teach, I sat through his whole session. We had four-day sessions and once a month. And he talked about the Starbucks brand and several other brands. And he said, that is not how brands are developed. And he explained how brands develop. And if you understand how brands develop, then you've got a good shot at knowing how to move the momentum in the direction that you want to go.
Right.
But that took a lot of basic research, even in philosophy.
No question. And I think about, you know, a lot of times when people are asking me, how do we define entrepreneurship in our programs? I like to use John Johnson, to cite another Walton College faculty member, as an example, because, you know, here's someone who has an illustrious academic career and at one point is looking at the state of the world and the state of the planet's health and saying, you know, there are massive problems. And he knows that we're sitting in this region that has this foundation of fundamental understanding of things like supply chain and logistics and how goods are transported around the world. So that's built up in a basic research environment. And at the same time, we have in our backyard this incredible dynamic community of retail and consumer packaged goods companies. And he says, you know what? I'm not going to sit and just complain about this problem. I'll be energized by it. And he created the Sustainability Consortium with many partners. And this is probably the most exciting entrepreneurial venture I've experienced in my career. He's the most exciting entrepreneur to me, because what he has built with many partners is based on pulling together the available resources in this very incredibly creative way and drawing on that foundation of very applied knowledge and that foundation of very, academic knowledge and having a real impact in the world as a result. So that couldn't have happened if you only had the companies and not the foundation of knowledge. You need both.
And that organization brings in a lot of revenue to the university.
Yes, yeah. And a lot of great people.
Yes. Industry's using it in a massive way.
Right.
Sarah, you're also helping us with the new venture development courses in the MBA program.
Yeah.
Would you mind talking about that a little bit?
Oh, sure. So the New Venture Development Program has been led by Professor Carol Reeves, who is Associate Vice Chancellor for Entrepreneurship and Innovation at the University for many years. And she, it's a class, but at the same time, it's a whole program and a whole community unto itself. And I think what she has learned over the years is that to cultivate high-growth, knowledge-based ventures, many of which come from a STEM environment to begin with. You can't just be in a classroom and teach students how to be entrepreneurs. You have to create an environment where they are surrounded by people who have stories to share, people who have experience in their industries, people who've been there, done that, potential investors, and many different kinds of educators and support systems. And so she's created a class that's surrounded by, we have our mentor weekend coming up in 3 weeks where people come from all over the country to mentor our teams. The other thing I think that she learned in that time is the value and importance of pairing really bright MBA students. Some of them are young full-time MBA students, and some of them are very seasoned executive MBA students with technologists. So we recruit from all disciplines within the university, but the magic happens when we have teams that have a technologist and an accountant and an MBA student and a marketing student in the mix. And in the beginning, they don't even speak each other's languages. The PhD student in civil engineering doesn't know what EBITDA is or any of the jargon, and vice versa for the MBA students. And by the end of the program, they're like family members and can speak for each other. And I spend a fair amount of time with her and those teams, and I always describe it as the heart of the entrepreneurship program. It reaches a small number of students, but it goes very, very deep. And those students typically stay very involved afterwards. So the alumni network is as rich as I've ever experienced, and they're practically at our doorstep, you know, begging us, please let me help you because you've helped me so much over the years. And so it's part of this sort of fertile ecosystem that you need to have for entrepreneurship to thrive.
Sarah, I know we've had a number of teams, and you've been on these teams, where we've gone to other universities and studied the best in technology commercialization, the best in entrepreneurship programs. You've seen all kinds of different ways of doing this. What are some things you've learned from that?
Those trips are always so much fun and so exciting because you see how ecosystems thrive. And I would say the main thing I've learned is that no two are alike. So in St. Louis, for example, there's this incredibly rich entrepreneurial ecosystem built around the life sciences, which, you know, builds on a research foundation that began decades and decades ago. In Georgia, in Atlanta specifically, there's a tremendous tech software development culture that's blossoming, and there are all kinds of reasons for that, too. In some ways, I come back from those trips feeling a little disappointed in myself because part of my goal is looking at the programs and what could I emulate, what could I create here, what can I learn there that I can build on here. But at the end of the day, I think what it comes down to is in Northwest Arkansas and in Arkansas as a whole, we have an obligation and an opportunity to look at what's unique about us. What are the assets that we have? And we have some absolutely tremendous assets in this state. And what are the opportunities, both in the near run and in the long term? So no one else, in my opinion, has the opportunity that we have in the areas of supply chain logistics, the future of commerce. Very few places have the opportunity that we have in sustainability. And I think that we have a growing opportunity in health and well-being because of the rich interconnectedness of the people in our state. There are other states that have great medical schools and great hospital systems, but very few have this ability to, on a dime, network people together, as we're doing in the executive MBA program and in our new executive education facility in Little Rock, to get people in the room together talking and agreeing to pilot ideas. So for me, looking at those other regions tells me we need to look in a fresh way at our own.
I need to pay you extra for that. That was good. Sarah, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me about entrepreneurship, science, and technology commercialization.
Thank you so much, Matt, for having me.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Be Epic podcast from the Walton College. You can find us on Google, SoundCloud, iTunes, or look for us wherever you find your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and rate us. You can find current and past episodes by searching Be Epic Podcast, one word, that's B-E-E-P-I-C podcast. And now, be epic.